Blog Talk Radio.
Sun's on my back, wind's in my ears.
Welcome to Those Darn Guys Who Happen to Be Therapists. I'm psychologist Dr. Jim Weaver, and usually I'm joined with psychotherapist Hughes Kraft and couples therapist David Sanford, but they are both unavailable this week, so I, myself alone, am going to be boldly going out into the podosphere where no therapists have gone before, or failing that, hopefully, by myself, putting the fun back in dysfunctional and bringing some insights into the issues of love, life, and the search for a decent relationship. And hopefully I'll be joined later on in the show by psychologist Dr. Mark Kiefner, the clinical director of Bayside Neurorehabilitation Services, with some cutting-edge brain search called Minute on the Mind. So the subject this morning is infidelity, and that's a big topic. It's a difficult topic. It's a very, very painful topic, and something that is quite a crisis in a relationship. It is a serious breach of trust and a betrayal. And once that trust is broken, it's very hard to repair. And it takes a lot of work, and the odds are not good that it can be repaired. But if people are really dedicated and sincere about trying to work their way through it, there are some approaches. It's a deep psychic wound, and it leaves a lot of scars. So there are two people in this dilemma. It's the person who has been unfaithful, and it is also the person who has been cheated on, who has had this their sense of trust betrayed. So the question is, how do you go about dealing with that once that's happened? Obviously, the best thing and the most important thing is for it not to have happened in the first place. I think it means that there is something amiss in the relationship, or can be amiss in one of the partners. And so that, depending on sort of where the focus is in terms of why it happened, it means where you're going to focus in terms of repair. So the issue on the for the person who's been betrayed is how do they accept what's happened, and how do they find some sense of forgiveness? I think that takes a lot of time and a lot of repair for anyone to be able to grasp what's happened. I think the first reaction is one of shock. You know, you're really surprised almost all the time of what's been going on, and so you have to get over the shock first, and that's sort of the first phase. Then I think there's a real deep need on the part of the person who has been cheated on to figure out why it happened, what went on. I think there's a wish strong wish to understand. Sometimes it can be an obsession to understand. You want details, partly to understand and partly to protect against a future betrayal. You know, if this has happened once, you don't, you're very, very afraid of it happening again, and you don't want it to happen again. So sometimes that wanting details can be an obsession, and I think that's a tricky thing for both parties. I think the person who has done the betraying, who has been unfaithful, I think they need to be as open as they can be with what happened and why, particularly, you know, interpsychically for them. What was going on in their mind? Why did they do this? And so I think they have to be, you know, introspective in terms of what's going on with them, searching inside themselves, and also trying to explain it to the other party. And sometimes that can be very painful. Sometimes there are some reasons in which they felt they weren't getting their needs met with the partner. Sometimes that's some responsibility of the partner who's been betrayed. Sometimes it isn't. But getting into sort of the nitty-gritty and the details is usually not a good idea. It leaves you with too much information, images that you'd rather not have, adds pain on top of the pain of being betrayed, is this pain of being included in some intimacy that this person has had with the person they've cheated with, and it can be another impediment to getting past it, forgiving it, and so forth. I think one of the things to be real clear about is that it takes time, because I think both parties, especially the person who has been the betrayer, feels guilty and wants to have their guilt forgiven, and so they push for forgiveness too quickly, wanting to get past this, and it's an interesting question. I'm not sure how it's a situation that the couple has to deal with themselves in terms of how much is too much time to be still blaming and angry, and how much is just a natural process that you have to go through in terms of being angry and blaming the partner who has betrayed you. And they obviously deserve a great deal of blame. And then how do you get past that stage to get to forgiveness? I think one of the things that's helpful and even absolutely necessary is a sincere regret on the part of the partner who's done the betraying. Sometimes that's hard to know how much regret there is there, how sincere the regret is, how much it has to do, as I said, with this issue of wanting to be forgiven and wanting the anger or the accusations or all of those things to go away, and how much it is that they really understand and appreciate how much they have wounded their partner. A case of infidelity can be an opportunity to look at the relationship and say, okay, what was happening in our relationship? Why did it happen? Was it something that we should have been doing to pay more attention to our relationship, to pay more attention to each other, to pay more attention to our mutual needs and really focusing on the relationship in a positive, healthy, productive way to help the relationship grow, stay fresh. Relationships can get stagnant. The intimacy, the sense of connection can grow stagnant. So, without shifting any of the responsibility to the wounded party, I think it does help to look sincerely and we just had a caller said it sounds like a great show, but they gotta run. Well, that's too bad, because I really could use some questions and your comments about this, or your experiences and what you've been through. So, the issue of how do you use this to take a look at your relationship without shifting the blame to the party who's been wounded, but to look at what were the dynamics of our relationship, what was going on there. So that can be an opportunity to look and have some reassessment of what's going on in the relationship. Like I said, it takes a lot of time to forgive and to regain that trust. This is a real breach and betrayal, such a serious one, and a psychic wound. And time is a very important element in that. So the question is, should you get therapy around that? I think it's an excellent idea. Their feelings are so intense, so raw about this, and it's usually something you haven't been through before or very often, so you don't have a lot of experience, you don't have a lot of ideas in terms of how to repair this relationship and whether this relationship can be repaired. It really does help to have a therapist, a third party, looking at these issues and helping you kind of face some of the tough things that are hard to face, looking at your issues on both sides, helping you find this balance between how do you look at the reasons why this happened without trying to shift the blame onto the wounded party, and how to get people, like I said earlier, not to be the person who's been the betrayer in this situation, how to get them not to go for easy forgiveness, to be pushing for easy forgiveness rather than a long-term and considered forgiveness in terms of what was going on with them and what they learn so that this will not happen again. I think being unfaithful is a form of acting out and a way of expressing some feelings or some sense of what's going on with you, rather than with words, but with actions. And in this case, very very destructive actions, very hurtful actions, very painful actions to the relationship and to your partner. I'm going to go now to a caller and see if they have any questions or comments about the show. Hello, caller. No, I guess the caller is not. Yes, hello.
Are you speaking to me?
I am speaking to you. Yes.
Yes. I'm wondering if, besides therapy, that actually writing letters to each other where you're devoid of, it's a more thoughtful process.
Mm-hmm.
And it circumvents all the emotions. And if you can get that process outside of yourself and deliver it to, you know, your partner, where they can read it in quiet and maybe mm-hmm. several times, where it's put down in an order. And you not only get it outside of, at least a portion of it, outside yourself, but that the other party can read it without having fired emotions. Do you think that's a positive thing?
I think that's an excellent idea. And I think the emotions are so intense and so raw in this that, as you say, sitting down and writing about something, I don't think it circumvents the emotions, but I think it funnels them or focuses them in ways where you can be a little bit deliberative about what you're saying. And the other thing is you can talk about it uninterrupted. One of the things that happens in dialogues between people is that they get interrupted and they don't get their full thoughts out. And I think especially in this kind of situation where, you know, the emotions are so intense that when you're hearing something back from the other person, it triggers you so much that you have this impulse to interrupt, you have this impulse to defend yourself, you have this impulse to fight off things that are painful or you don't want to hear. And if you are not interrupted, you can get all of that out and find a kind of a cohesive way to say that. And the other person then, as you said also, they can take that in and absorb it or read it many times, several times, many times, getting a little bit more of the content each time. It's much easier to understand things or process things or absorb things if you're calm rather than emotional. And, you know, the first time you read a letter about what's going on with the other person, your emotions can get really keyed up. Subsequent times, there's less and less emotions. You've sort of, you know, had that reaction, and now you can read it with a little bit more calm each time and maybe absorb more and more. So I think that's an excellent technique and a way to do that. And I think the idea is to be expressing more of where each person is. And you, like I said, it can be an opportunity to get to know the other person on a different level. You know, anytime you go through any unusual experience, it helps you to understand your partner in a different way. So this is a way to understand where they're at around all this. And again, it may be many, many letters that have to go back between each other. You shouldn't get discouraged with the first couple of letters back and forth if there's still so much rawness and so much desire not to be working towards a resolution, but to be working towards getting the feelings out and really expressing what's going on with you. So to remember that that's a process too that takes an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm. May I ask another question?
You may.
I was wondering, you know, in this and in for the history of man, we've had rituals that seem to focus and cleanse, and this is an age without ritual. But if there has been a breach of trust, if the couple do decide that, you know, that this relationship is worth saving, what are your thoughts on an actual ritual of restating the terms and the commitment to each other?
I think that's an excellent idea. I think that there can be all kinds of rituals. Some ritual in terms of letting go of what happened with the affair, and some ritual of renewal and recommitment and a new relationship, sort of phoenix rising out of the ashes in some ways. So that would be a good thing to work out together in terms of what you want to do to say, okay, we are ready to put this behind us and we're ready to start anew. And that's something I think you can't rush, and you have to be aware of when the timing is right to say, okay, we are now ready to move on. Let's make some symbolic gestures, some rituals to say, this is the time that we will put the past behind us and work towards the future. And I think, you know, just like getting married the first time, you need to work up to that and make decisions as to when the timing is right, or if this is the right time to get married. You may need to think about when's the right time to get remarried. A lot of people these days are writing their own marriage vows and ceremony and you know, making that personal time. And I think this might be a place to do that again. So you really can say that this is a definitive moment. We can actually define when we're ready, when we're doing this.
And in times after that, obviously you'll have arguments and things like that. What about this? Is it a sin that you have to bear for the rest of your days having it brought up? Is that a very negative part? If now from every time there's an argument or a discussion, it's the fact of your infidelity is brought up. What about bearing that burden for the rest of that relationship's existence? I mean, is that unlivable with? Do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I think that should be seen as, okay, something is not finished here. Okay, so somehow we rushed the process of saying it's behind us. Okay, whoever brings it up, especially the wounded person. So you say, okay, you have to say, okay, something about the healing process that we tried to go through and finish is not finished. What did we miss? Again, it may be that somehow there hasn't been enough discussion there. Maybe there hasn't been enough contrition. Maybe there hasn't been enough sense that the person who did this is truly regretful and sincerely regretful. Or it may be that the person who was betrayed has not found the center of forgiving, that they haven't really forgiven and really healed the wound within themselves. So it means that it's not finished, and I think you should focus on it as let's focus again on how do we finish this, how do we put it behind us. And it may be that you can't. I think if it keeps coming up and in arguments, one of the things that gets brought up when it's not related to what's going on, means that there's something that the person hasn't completed in terms of forgiveness.
I think there's so much optimism that goes into a marriage, and it's considered a sacred, beautiful thing, a commitment you're only supposed to make once in a lifetime, although that's a very rare thing now.
Right.
And someone has broken this beautiful chalice erected in the mind and by society. But now you're living with a thing with that has been repaired. It's full of, it's been smashed. It's full of cracks.
Right.
So there has to be. Now I am living with this. What could have been beautiful now is filled with cracks. I will never. I will never have that naivete. I will never have the purity of that process again.
Right.
There could be an anger, a lifetime anger over that. What about that?
Well, yeah, I think that's why it's very difficult to repair. And, you know, lots of times the relationship can't go forward. It can't repair it. It's something that is just unforgivable. The question is the new relationship, because it is a new relationship, it's a different relationship. You're absolutely right. It's something that's now not pristine and fresh and unsullied, has been sullied. So you repair those cracks, you wash off the dirt, and you say, is this new relationship good enough for me? Is it worth it now to be in this relationship? Sometimes that answer is no. And sometimes it's, yeah, you know, we went through a tough time. I'm older but wiser. I've been through some pain and I'm different from it. In some ways worse off, in some ways better off. But this relationship, this person is worth it to me. And I think, you know, obviously it's absolutely necessary and important for the person who was the betrayer to not be, engaging in anything that would go in that direction again. And I think there's obviously a period where the person who's been betrayed is going to be very suspicious, very worried. It takes time to earn that trust again, and I think you have to be, you know, very, very good about not giving the person something to worry. They've got to be good about, you know, giving up some of their worry. You have to maybe be better than you would have had to been before that, because you could have done things before that wouldn't have raised suspicion. But now if you do them, they raise suspicion. The person has a right to be suspicious because they were trusting and they weren't looking for anything that was going to hurt them. And now they're hyper, you know, hypersensitive and hyper aware of things that might hurt them. So, it's a tough process, and that's why I say I think a lot of times it really is helpful to get a third party involved, a therapist, to help you look at that. You know, what is your capacity to forgive? What is your capacity to forgive in general? What is your capacity to forgive this particular person for this particular? So, we're out of time for today. Thank you very much.
Wonderful topic. Always interesting. Yeah. Wonderful topic. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, that's it. That's it for us today. I think both Mark and David and Hughes will be back with us next week. So, look forward to you joining us then. And please tell your friends. Especially if you have friends who would have questions about the topics that we're talking about. We love to have callers in, and thank the caller. I thank the caller today. Okay, we'll see you next week with those darn guys who happen to be therapists. Bye-bye.
Well, in the evening we get together. Long day at work you leave behind. My bones are aching, your back is tired. Hold me close and let the pain unwind. And we walk together down the street. We used to walk so many times alone, and you take me away.